Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agrohomeopath Avi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is the first day of the month of June, 2011. This is show number 25 of How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Organic Gardens. Thank you for joining us. I will be hosting the show today, and hopefully our co-host, Kavir Raj, will be able to sign in, and we should be with him shortly. You can also follow Kaviraj2 on Twitter, Debbie Bruck on Twitter, and you'll find Kaviraj on Facebook, and you can ask him all of your agro-homeopathy questions there or comment on the chat we have going. It's now open for any listeners to the show. I'd like you to know that he is renowned for his work all around the world. He is a world traveler, and I like to think of him as saying, where is Waldo? Well, where in the world is Kavir Raj, a constant agro-homeopathic traveler? And I know he was recently in Canada. Hopefully he's going to tell us about his work there and the other projects that he has going on. He has been also very outspoken on the issue of GMO, genetically modified organisms, and we have quite a few blogs and discussion areas on Homeopathy World Community where you can watch some excellent scientific videos and outspoken persons regarding this area in our lives, in environmentalism, in our freedom to choose natural products, and also in truth in product labeling. Regarding that truth in product labeling, I thought I would mention to you something that I read recently about going to the store and knowing when you're picking up your fruits, the labels. How do you read the labels, the PLO codes, for the conventionally grown fruit or those that are grown with chemicals? So if you look at those stickers, they consist of four numbers. The organically grown fruits have a five numeral PLO, prefaced by the number 9. The genetically engineered varieties of fruits have a five-numeral PLO, prefaced by the number 8. And so, for example, if you were to get a conventionally grown banana, it would be simply four numerals, 4011. For the organic variety, remember that number 9, so it would be 94011. For the kind that are genetically engineered, that would be 84011. These tips are specifically important now that over 80% of all processed foods in the United States are genetically modified. So many countries in the European Union have been banning these types of GM products, genetically modified products. And if we stood up and spoke out, we would perhaps change what is going on in the United States, because I feel that the energy of the United States is shifting toward more natural products, toward the population becoming more and more educated and self-educated about their own health and the health of their environment. The produce that are including Austria, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, and Luxembourg have been banning these GM products. And So I think they have a little slogan that says, eat healthy, buy, and grow organic. We will be talking about bees today and how important they are for pollinating and continuing the ability of the world to have food on their table. In addition, Kaviraj has a cause. It's in causes.com. It's called CAM United One Voice. Oh, I think someone has called in. Let me check.
Yes, Kavi. I'm here.
Okay, I see that you were able to call in today. Thanks. Do you want to tell people a little bit about CAM United One Voice and what that is and why you started it?
Yeah, that's actually because it's high time that we forget a little bit about the differences and get all together. That is, homeopathy, naturopathy, acupuncture, and so forth. Yeah, all the so-called alternative health disciplines, they should all come together and they should say, okay, let's show and speak with one voice and let's show them one front, because divided we fall. And if one falls, the rest is soon to follow. And we have seen how it goes with the herb directive in the EU, that was immediately adopted also in Canada, although Canada is not the EU, but they took the same legislation. And this is all a push for codex. Yeah?
Yes.
It's
That's
all
been
about
in the works
monopoly.
For a number of years.
Yeah, it's all about the monopoly for Big Pharma, and everybody else can stuff it. As mm-hmm. we see everywhere, the big corporations get less and less regulations, and the people that get more and more restrictions. But that's an upside-down world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we should reverse that, and we should put all hands on deck, yeah, and
mm-hmm.
weather this storm and make sure that that we stay afloat. Because otherwise, if we don't do that, if half the crew is staying below decks, so to speak, then we won't weather the storm.
That's correct. And we have so many issues that we have to be on the front line for today. We're going to have a show tomorrow on the vaccination issues, and there is a firestorm of news regarding scientific evidence and the correlation between illness, ADHD, autism, and vaccines, how children's developments are being stifled, and also in the environment. And we've got just on all fronts what's going on recently about the drugs, how people are being basically weaned on drugs. In my last show I called the pharma parasites and the people hosts. And I think that this is true with what has recently come out. We're going to be talking about that maybe in a future show. I wanted to mention to people that we do have an online daily newspaper where so many of our promoters and advocates of health freedom are speaking up. There's someone, Cutie Cutie, on Twitter who is really out in front with tens of thousands of followers, and she is always putting out some good information she's writing about Prilogy, some sort of a drug that is also having problems today. And so I wanted to let people know that the Homeopaths Daily online can be found by just following me on Twitter and linking up to it there. And we also have another article that is posted on Mercola about the hepatitis B vaccine that's highly linked to sudden infant death. I mean, it just goes on and on. So now we're going to go into, let me see if there's any other kind of housekeeping regarding the show. We're on Blog Talk Radio. There's a show on Monday, which has not been consistent because of the holidays and summer traveling. But that is Studying the Organon, and we're almost finished reading the entire book, and I'll be glad to see that happen. And then on Wednesday, we've got the Organic Gardening with you, Kaviraj, when you're available, and otherwise we fill in with some other pretty good stories. On Thursday, we've got the Vaccinations and Your Rights with Alan Phillips, and tomorrow we're going to have Greg Glazer, constitutional law expert. And on Sunday, I do the little midnight meditation to kind of say there's something positive in the world, even though it appears to be all negative. And so we're going to be talking today about your visit to Canada, and perhaps you're going to tell us a little bit about what you saw there and what kind of successes that you've been having.
Well, I was actually in the same area as I was last winter, that is the Ottawa area, and I spoke there with some farmers I hadn't seen before, yeah, and they had heard about it. So one of them lives, well, practically in the middle of the bush. She's actually a Dutch woman, and she's been living there for 30 years. And she's been tending the soil there, and now she is getting some results, but she also has problems with pests and diseases because the soil is very acidic there. You see, what they have done is they've cut down the trees and put in grassland. Yeah, and well, in Canada at that area, there is a lot of pine, and pine makes soil acidic and makes it very hard for other things to grow on. And there are a lot of fungi in there. And so fungal diseases are, in such cases, the biggest problems. And we talk mainly about how to improve the soil and how to make sure that these pests don't even come up.
Okay, well, I'm living in North Carolina. And we have, it's all pine here, and our soil is very acidic. We have some beautiful azaleas that are in bloom, and there are, you know, hey, are you out in the garden here in St. Kitts?
Yeah,
You're in the park? Okay.
No, I'm sitting out the back in the sunshine.
Uh-huh. Okay, we're getting a little children's playfulness in the background. So sounds like it's a pretty day out there.
Yeah, it is.
So do you think that even we here in North Carolina have a problem with fungi and the spread of this kind of thing in the soil? And it sounds like if they're just slashing and cutting down trees and putting in grassland, they're changing the natural ecosystem.
That's what they've been doing for a long time. Yeah, she has replanted a whole bunch of trees, and of course the birds have done a lot of work. And she works mainly with biodynamics. And so, yeah, the B500 does her good. She doesn't mind most of the weeds much, but she was having a problem also with poison ivy. Everybody seems to have poison ivy. What I see happening is actually because they cut down all these forests, the fungi that normally would live off the forest, they can no longer do that. And they go for their food. So they go after the living plants that we put instead. And that's why we have so many fungal diseases, so-called. But they are not diseases. They are simply a decomposition system because, yeah, it also needs to survive. And among the largest living entities in the world, you know, we think of the whale as pretty large, but, you know, the whale is like a microbe compared to some of the fungi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In an area like Canada, where still so much is forest, you could say that all that forest, underneath there is one living entity, and that's a fungus.
Right, because they have all of the mycorrhizae. What do they have?
Yes. Yes, the mycorrhizae, and they go everywhere.
Yeah, and they're all connected.
Symbiosis, They live in symbiosis with the trees, but if we take the trees away, well, they have to survive. And if you are that big, you need a lot to survive. Yeah? Just imagine a fungus as big as Canada.
That is, it spreads over the whole thing. It's sort of like in our body. Yes. We have a network of systems like the circulatory system or the lymphatic system or whatever. It's all connected. So you're saying that this the fungi underneath the soil, are they're all communicating with each other. And what happens when you when you cut down the forest where they normally live and you now have, instead of a shaded, moist area, you have a sunny, open area to with the grassland. So what happens to the fungi?
Well, the fungi, they in grassland, it's all right. But when it becomes crop growing, then all you have is bare soil. Yeah, and so these fungi, they're living there, and of course, yeah, they need to survive, and they come up and they attack the grains. Yeah, and then come the insects, and they suck up the grains, and then they carry that around to the next one. Yeah, to the next field, and so forth. So it spreads both underground and above ground. Yeah, and of course the soil is bare and it's very dry usually. So a lot of these fungi die out, but there are other fungi that thrive under such circumstances, and they also come. Yeah, we see that with, for instance, in Ireland, they brought in a pine from northern Norway, and it does very well in Ireland because it grows bigger because it's warmer, yeah, and it grows faster too. But it depletes the soil of all nutrients, and it brings out a fungus that attacks the tree. Yeah, that's no wonder, because the fungus lives on a different species and now has to still go after its nutrients that have been taken out of the soil. So it goes into the tree and eats it out of the tree because the tree has taken it up. And that is really what's happening. It is all a competition for nutrients. Yeah?
Okay, yeah. So basically, humans play this incredible part in changing the ecosystems and playing with, they don't even know what they're doing. When they move one plant to another region of the world and think that it's going to enhance the environment, rather it causes these problems and then there's no solution to. So what did you? I have two questions. What did you suggest for this farmer regarding the spreading of the fungi in her area for where she's planting her crops? And then the other, I'm going to ask you after that to go back to the poison ivy issue. I'd like to learn a little bit more. And you're not on the live chat, but we have a live chat going, and we've got a couple of conversations and questions regarding the bees, and we're going to get to that coming up soon. But let's just continue on with what we learn about the grains being attacked by fungi. I don't know whether to say fungi or fungi.
We say the singular is fungus.
Yes, it's fungus. Okay, so you think it's fungi.
Yeah,
I guess it depends on what part of the country you live. So the fungi are attacking all of these grain crops. So their habitat has moved from the moist undergrowth of the forest area to now spreading both below and above ground, and then it enables all these other types of fungi to come in and take over, and they are not in a limited kind of capacity because they're in a new environment now. So what do we do for these grain crops or other crops, like, I guess, corn or whatever?
Well, I would say you have to put organic matter in the soil. And then they do that, and then, of course, the first year, because they've given it finally organic matter, you get an explosion. Yeah?
Okay,
and
explosion
so
of the fungi.
So they still have the problem in the plants. And then they say, see, organic doesn't work. But it needs time. Yeah, it took time for all this stuff to develop the way it is, so it needs time to go the other way again. And the year after that, if you keep putting your organic matter in the soil, the year after that, you don't have the problem anymore. Yeah, because then they can finally do what they normally do, which is decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's what they are. And so that is how they live. They live from decomposing matter. And if that's not available, they go for the live trees. The same in Australia. 15% of the forest is left. Yeah, and because of that, yeah, we have the problem that the fungi there also attack the trees. There is not enough to, for them left to eat. Yeah, and so there you have the dieback. And in Canada, you have these huge forests still, but still they have a problem with the emerald ash borer and some other insects. In the pine and in the maple, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is all because we have disturbed nature to such an extent that you could say everything is so far out of balance that what we normally saw as pests that were not really pests, yeah. We now see as the heaviest attacks ever, because there is not enough for them to eat left. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
We have disturbed the balance in such a way that we could say forget it.
So we have a problem though, because it's such a broad. Probably a number of acreage. Where do you get the ability to provide enough mulch and decomposition material? How can you provide that?
That's going to be pretty hard because you know the stuff that was normally there, the leaves and the branches and the trees that were dying, they are no longer there. Yeah, they've all been chopped down and turned into paper. So, okay, newspaper is one way, yeah, cardboard is another way, and of course manure and straw and things like that, but that is not what it normally had.
Right.
What it normally had was pulp and you know, stuff that wasn't processed. And if you take newspaper, well, there's bleach in there, and there is all kinds of other stuff in there. And then, of course, you have the inks, yeah? And so that is also poisoning your soil. If you put cardboard in there from cardboard boxes, that's
yeah.
usually corrugated cardboard. And
yeah.
there's a lot of glue in there that doesn't belong in the soil. Yeah.
Oh.
So the problem is really we should be planting trees like mad.
Oh, we should be we'll be planting the trees that they've just finished cutting down. You're going to planting them back
yes.
again?
Yes, of course. Everything that has been cut down should be planted back with equal vigor, but we can't keep up with it. Now, I was just reading the other day and posted that on my Facebook that you know one environmentalist in Brazil, yeah, has been murdered. Yeah.
Oh.
Why? Because he wanted to stop the Amazon being cut down, and that just keeps on going unabated. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
And government that is a so-called socialist government and doesn't understand what they're doing, and they've been bribed, and they've loosened the rules and the restrictions on Amazon cutting.
I see.
Yeah,
so there's more cutting going on than ever before.
Yes, and there is nothing new being planted. Everything is turned into grassland for beef. Yeah, so that McDonald's can sell you your its lousy burgers.
Well, do they have
yeah.
a problem with erosion, or you know, because it's going to deplete the soil completely?
Yeah, it will deplete the soil. Point one, and it will erode a lot before the grass comes up. Yeah,
right.
Because it's very wet out there. And where it's wet, there is rain. And where there's rain, water is always running. So, you know, where water runs and you have no cover for the topsoil washes away. And so we can see that because the plume at the end of the Amazon River, which is mud, you know, which comes down when there is a monsoon, that plume of mud has extended twice as far into the ocean. Yeah, because
right.
Everything is being washed away.
So it really boggles my mind that the people who are governing are not concerned, even nationalistically, about their own land, that they wouldn't want to preserve and enhance their own land. We have a note Dr. Bob has written that the most outspoken environmentalists in the Amazon are executed by the hamburger farm cartels. That's what he calls
yes.
it. He doesn't give it a name. So I mean, I'm not laughing because it's a very sad and horrific thing that is happening to people, but the way that he calls it, the hamburger cartels, I mean, it's to feed, I hate to say, my own, the civilians in my own country. I have not been to a fast food venue, a store, in like 40 years. So I just can't imagine that people are addicted to going to these places because they put so much salt and sugar and other enhancements and make a quick and easy kind of meal, but people don't realize it's not that the long-term and chronic effects of it go really run deep into the heart of all people and all countries. I want to know what else to do for this fungi. Victor told me it's an F-U-N-G-U-Y, a fungi problem.
G-I.
Yeah, yeah, G-I, but he made a joke. Fungi. So what do we do besides enhance the soil, which is going to take a year and there's going to be an explosion of this fungi? Growth over population after 1 year as it starts to get started in its going back to its natural mode of habitation. So what do we do?
Well, we can also, of course, make the soil more alkaline so that less fungi have a chance to live there, yeah. So you change the pH of the soil, and living entities there will change too.
Okay.
Yeah, and the available okay. nutrients will change because there will be different living entities coming in there. Yeah, that process different things, and therefore all the nutrients become more available.
So, do you recommend putting on lime? I mean, what do you recommend?
Yeah. You can use liming, and you can also use calcium carbonicum to activate the right bacteria. I don't know
okay.
why they smoke.
Just like in here, out there.
No.
They can do or something. Okay.
So are you saying that we should use homeopathic calcium carb?
Yeah, you can use that too because that changes the bacteria.
Okay. So a lot of people may not know what is this calcium carbonicum and how do we apply it, and if it's for, you know, acres and acres or hectares,
you can do that on acres and acres, and then you just apply it like you would normally do with a boom spray, yeah. There's a huge tank, a 10,000 liter tank on there. Wow, you know, you do 20 drops on a liter, and 20 drops is about half a mil. Yeah, so every 2 liters there is a whole mil. So on 10,000 liters, you have 5,000 mil. That is 5 liters. So you put 5 liter in the tank, and you add water. And by adding water, it gets all stirred up, and then you can spray your land with it.
So
yeah, that
would be Yeah.
That will activate the right bacteria and the right bacilli to create a more alkaline soil.
So do we have any actual plantations or areas that you have seen this at work?
Yeah, well, I have done that in Australia, of course, because in Australia you have a similar problem. The soil is very acidic. It's sandy. It contains no nutrients in there. Everything has been washed out already. Yeah. And the eucalypt trees, they root so deep that they get the nutrients from very, very deep. Yeah. A eucalypt root can go 300 meters deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with ease. And so that's where they get the nutrients from. But that in the surface, there is no topsoil in Australia. If you have half a centimeter, you are a very lucky farmer. Yeah. So in Australia, what we did was bring in organic matter. Yeah. And lime the soil, or use horse and horse manure, because horse manure is very alkaline. And if you have horse manure, you can also improve an acidic soil. But as when the soil is acidic, you put chicken and swine manure, because that's very acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about? I was trying to look up the root, the tree you said, Euclid root, E-U-C-L-I-D?
Eucalypt. The eucalyptus.
Oh, eucalyptus.
Yeah, eucalypt.
Okay.
Yeah. They root 300 meters deep. Easy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so eucalyptus is a very popular plant for many, many things, for its scent and for its properties. So that's the one that you say that they are growing and the root goes deep. Okay. I just wanted to clarify myself what I was hearing you say.
So in Australia, they have cut down too much. And their only hope of bringing rain on the interior is to replant trees. Yeah. We just had a 13-year drought there, and then everybody drowned. Yeah.
And then everybody drowned?
Yeah, because there was this big cyclone there and around the north of Queensland. Everything was flooded,
uh-huh.
Even in the interior. Yeah, so that when then finally rain comes, there comes too much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all been has been accumulated. Yeah, but what normally is moved away over the land and rains on the land no longer happens, so it accumulates. And then when the storm comes, then it dumps a lot more water.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, was there anything else that you wanted to say about the fungi and how to handle that problem, or did you want to move on to, I have a question about the poison ivy.
There are, of course, remedies that you can use also to control fungi. One of the most important is silica. Then you have sulfur. You have carbovegetabilis. These are all homeopathic remedies for those that don't know. And used in a low potency of 6X or 6C. And as I said before, 20 drops in a liter. And then actually you have to shake the liter 50 times. And with a 5-liter can, you can still do that. You just bang it on the ground. Yeah. So if you use it in the proper way, many of these things can be controlled, because that is also a question of activation of the right bacteria and bacilli in the ground, the right living entities, that then keep everything under control, because they have not been activated in an acid soil. And if you then add the right remedy, then they will be activated, and they by themselves already change the pH of the soil, because they bring in all the nutrients. Yeah, like in an acid soil, the alkaline nutrients are all locked up, And so if you activate the right set of bacilli, then they will make them available to the fungi, and the fungi pass them on to the plants.
We have a message from Victor, who popped in on the chat and gave us a link to the Health Maven blog. And he's a very popular environmentalist and natural plant naturalist. And he has a little quote on here. In the years leading up to Chernobyl, some dairy farmers in Austria were using remineralization as a part of their operations. They added rock dust to the liquid manure as well as combining it with compost, thereby removing odors and greatly increasing soil biota. As a result, cows had twice the normal lifespan and produced much more milk. Amazingly enough, after Chernobyl, the cheeses that were remineralized as well as biodynamic cheeses measured no radioactivity whatsoever. Austrians would stand in long lines in order to buy these safe, remineralized products, writes Joanna Campi. And this is really, really important to us today all around the world due to the nuclear meltdown at Fukushima. The most recent message that I had heard from Mike Adams on Natural News said that this is worse, many times worse over than what has happened in Chernobyl. It is still going on. The radiation is still being emitted. They have not solved this problem, and I don't know whether they ever will, really, but we have to be really careful about it. So we just learned something very important from, you know, I wish I knew this guy's name, Health Maven. If somebody knows his name, let me know. He was talking here about the magnesium and radiation protection. So also I know that my husband has worked, Dr. Bob Bruck has worked considerably with rock dust for the past 20 years in the United States. And he said that our soils do not respond as well as very poor and contaminated soils to the rock dust applications, I presume. Maybe it just doesn't need it as much as it doesn't absorb the nutrients from it as much as in those other areas. But I think if we have radiation, and we are measuring that now even in the Northeast, that we should consider using the rock dust applications. I hope that there will be more studies.
Absolutely. And that's why I would say if you don't have the rock dust, then you can use a remedy like silica. Because silica is basically also made out of flint, or quartz, which is rock dust, And so therefore, silica could easily be used in such a way that you get similar results.
So maybe that will help us with the problem of the radiation toxicity level in our soils. Who knows if that will pick it up.
I have a good feeling about that because what I have always noted that if any soil is actually contaminated with anything, that by activating the soil with the appropriate remedy, the contamination is always quickly removed. Yeah, so. These critters down there, they don't know. They know what to do. They don't want this stuff around, and so they work it out of the soil.
Just the basic principle of how silica works, even in our body, to create this pushing out, this discharge of whatever. Like if you have a splinter, it pushes it out of the body. And in Haiti, I remember when the big earthquake occurred, silica was one of the main remedies. Homeopathically, silica was used because of the contamination from all the buildings and the toxicity level there.
Yes, absolutely. Because, all the dust, people breathed a lot of dust.
And asphalt.
From that, from that, of course, they all got coughs and they all got lung problems. And the remedy that worked best there was actually silica.
Right. And you were there, so We're very proud of having you there to help so many children and families with that immediate trauma. Also, I wanted to, I think we've kind of covered this, unless you have more information. I wanted to go back to that question about poison ivy, because I see it growing now everywhere here as summer has started. It's just climbing up trees and covering the ground. And what do you do in terms of, I mean, this woman out in Ottawa had a problem of poison ivy as well. What do you do both for the environment and for humans who contract this problem?
Well, normally the poison ivy, where does it grow? It grows with in the forest. And that's where it belongs. The forest has been taken away, but the poison ivy doesn't need the forest to grow. It can grow anywhere. Yeah, and so it can climb up anything and go anywhere it wants. So what I have used is the remedy Juglans nigra, which is the black walnut, to stop it from growing. You cannot kill it. Because in homeopathy we don't kill, we restore a balance. Yeah, so you do not kill it, but you stop it growing, and meanwhile you can improve your soil to a degree where the poison ivy doesn't like it anymore, and then it will go away by itself. You can do everything by changing the soil.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we have some little notes on here from Dr. Bob. I don't know whether he's called in, but he's giving us some, he hasn't called in, but he's giving us chat messages today. He says that it seems that any remedy that stimulates natural microbial activity will help any contaminated soil, and this is called phytoremediation. So he's giving us some terminology, and he says that due to global climate change, this has caused the Rhus toxicandra and the poison ivy to grow faster than any other perennial, and this has been published in scientific journals. It absorbs CO2 and assimilates it faster than any other plant. That is a fascinating factoid.
Yeah, because the poison ivy is then actually taking over what normally the forest would do.
And that's funny, because I think over the years I've learned the pine trees really do a lot of respiration more than any other. Is that correct?
They are evergreens after all.
Say that again?
Yeah. I said they are evergreens after all. And although a pine needle may not look much, but if you would put it flat, then you would have quite a surface, and they're very densely situated on that tree. Yeah.
Yes.
So pine tree by itself could possibly process the CO2 faster than a green leafy tree that only has leaves in the summer, because the pine tree can do it all year round.
And if you think about the pine needle itself, there's thousands and thousands on the tree, so there's a lot of plant surface. And, and so isn't that interesting? Because I always think of the poison ivy as climbing up the pine tree. So like they're kind of in some kind of relationship together.
Yeah. We see that a lot also in Ireland, that they climb up pine trees. Yeah, they climb up any tree actually. But then, you know, most trees will get suffocated in the end. And so... by securing its own survival, it kills the other. It's actually, in that sense, it's a parasite. But it's a very good parasite. Why? Because it can process CO2 faster than the trees, and it helps in keeping at least that a bit low. Although CO2 is not as important as we are led to believe, because it comprises only a thousandth of a percent of the air. Yeah. So 1,000th of the percent of the air is CO2, and of course there is if you could all compact that into one container, you need a very big container for that. Yeah. But at the same time, it is only 0.001%. And so giving it that much causal importance to climate change is, to me, a little bit exaggerated. If we think about the nitrogen comprising 73% of the atmosphere, then nobody complains about nitrogen.
Yeah, I'm sure they must.
Yeah, nitrogen is a carcinogenic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? No, nobody speaks about that, but that is 73% of the air, and we need it for our metabolism, and plants need it too. Yeah. So nitrogen is a much more important part of the atmosphere than CO2. CO2 is minuscule in the overall scheme. Yeah.
I think if I may be incorrect, and Dr. Bob can certainly correct me, but I think it's the combination of the NOx and all the other kinds of destructive types of elements in the air when they make compounds, and that's the problem. It's not the CO2 on its own or the nitrogen on its own. It's when it gets in combination with other things up in the atmosphere and then can do some destructive work to the environment.
If that is the case, then that is more from what comes out of the back of an airplane than from anything else that is in nature. Yeah, because in nature, everything works together. And the only entity in nature that works against nature is man.
I don't know. If I think about the number of volcanic eruptions right now, I think that's spewing a lot of stuff into the air. But
Created these volcanic eruptions? We have taken all the cushions from under the continent in the form of oil and gas. Yeah, so the continent is no longer supported, and so the continent begins to sink a little bit. When it gets a bit of room, it goes down, and we see that in Japan, where we had this massive earthquake, and parts of the coast are so low that the towns who were there are underwater at the flood. So the whole island has tilted, and there we see proof of this. Yeah.
Right. So, no matter which way we go, it comes back to man's activities on Earth. Dr. Bob has said that. Go ahead.
It's mainly because of the exploitation of the oil and the gas. Yeah.
Right.
That is, we transform the oil into so many substances, and we spray them on the land, and they become poisonous. If you take the blood out of the Earth gets anemic. Yeah?
Right.
And the oil, to me, is the blood of the earth, yeah. And we take it out at such a rate that she becomes anemic, and therefore also forest disappears, yeah. Man is basically acting out a part of what the earth would in other circumstances probably do to itself, yeah.
Right.
When she goes through her own cycles, yeah. Because nothing. Nothing in time is linear. It's always cyclic. Yeah, we have year after year, day after day, hour after hour. These are all cycles. Yeah, nothing in nature is linear. And so
that is correct.
Yes, there is a connection between what we do to the earth, because what we do to the part, we do to the whole. And so I don't think that we can change that so easily. It's been going on for pretty long, and the guys who are doing it are having too much power. Yeah, but we can all reduce our use of the fossil fuels, and so reduce the amount that needs to be taken out. And that's why I always say let's get this agro homeopathy off the ground, because that will reduce the use of fossil fuels by 50%, because we don't have to make the fertilizers, we don't have to make pesticides anymore. We can reduce the transport, because the transport takes a massive amount. Did you know that to produce 1 kilo of food, we use 200 kilos of oil.
No, I didn't. So
yes.
I didn't know the exact amount, but I know that it takes an awful lot of energy to get a little bit out. And there's a lot of controversy over that. We only have a few more minutes left to the show. I cannot believe how fast we go when we're having a good time here. Wanted to let people know what the folks on the chat are talking about, and then give a little plug to you about your book. And we're going to have to do a lot more talking about your book on the next show. So let me let you know that Dr. Bob has said that, first, Victor has let us know that the health maven, his name is Daryl Fawcett, and he is a renowned person in the health field. And we're going to maybe do a little bit more research and talking about him. And Dr. Bob has said that CO2 is rising at a rate of 2% per year, and that is no exaggeration, that CO2 can be attributed to 98% of global warming due to the formation of the methane, NOx, and all of the CO2 combined to create this massive changes in our upper atmosphere. And you can see how our climates have changed with tsunamis and tornadoes all around the country here, floods and earthquakes and all sorts of disruption. Obviously, what you said about the oil underground, I was thinking you said that it is our blood. I'm thinking it's more like our lubricant, like oil is a lubricant, and the cholesterol and the fats that in our body that we actually do need. So that's another type of a metaphor. Dr. Bob says that automobiles and airplanes emitted 34 billion metric tons of CO2 into the atmosphere this year, far more than volcano activity. Now, that is a good another factoid we got there. We have Victor. Yeah, Victor has given us another link to a website called farmwars.info. So it talks all about, you can check it out and look up bioterrorism, GMOs, health, corporate manipulation, and he gave a link to Chemtrail Investigators Wanted, because there's a lot of stuff going on up in our atmosphere there that people are not aware of, only those who are taking photographs and looking up skyward. We have about 5 minutes left. Do you want to give us a little rundown on your book? What has happened? I know that you just had a publication and it's completely sold out. And hopefully it's going to be reprinted.
It's not sold out. It's not sold out. There was a rumor. Somebody ordered, they said, and they were told they had to wait till June. And so they must have ordered from some representative who is getting
a
shipment.
I see. Okay, so that is a mistake. Okay, so therefore your book is still available directly from the Mariana publisher. There is a huge link on the Homeopathy World Community website. For those who are new to this, you might as well give us a little bit of introduction about, you've got about 4 minutes, what is the book about and what they will learn by getting it?
The book is basically about how to treat plants with homeopathy instead of poisons, for diseases, pests, and nutrient problems. And it tells you how to improve your soil, what the soil is consisting of, how to improve it. It tells you a bit about plant physiology, and it tells you all about pests and diseases and nutrient problems, weeds, injuries to plants. All these subjects are dealt with, and it explains how to use the remedies for what kind of problems, and it's very well illustrated. There are some 335 illustrations in there, that show you the pests and the diseases and the nutrient problems, so that they can be easily identified. And in the back is a little repertory, and the repertory tells you if you look up where your problem on your plant is. Is it on the roots? Is it on the stem? Is it on the branches or on the leaves or the flowers? Yeah, and then He has a series of named diseases that are caused, that they say are caused by bacteria, fungi, and bacilli, which we see always associated with these diseases. And of course, there is a chapter on how to control weeds. And I just read in an old, the 1800s, that Lidum palustre, or Ledum, as people call it, is another remedy that can be used, because in the days of old, they made a powder out of it and used it to keep the potato vito off the potato. And,
that's good.
So as we know that remedies always work better in potency than in the crude, then in the potency it should do the same thing. And so I've started saying to people to experiment with it in the case of beetles and borers and other insects that go inside the plant. Yeah, because before I used to use Tuya for that, but that was a little bit one-sided. Now we may have Lidum for that kind of thing too.
Well, that's really interesting, because there's a huge discussion on Homeopathy World Community regarding the use of Ledum for Lyme's disease. I think that's correct.
Yeah.
And there is an epidemic spread of Lyme's disease today from tick bites and stuff. And I mean, it's not the only remedy used for it, but it is one of the major ones. And it's interesting that you say it also can be used for these potato beetles and other kinds of beetles.
Yes, and I have recommended it several times to people with sheep. Yeah, you know, normally they send them through a wash with poison. Yeah, they put some poison in there and then they drive the sheep through. I said use Lidum instead, because Lidum is for punctured wounds, and what does it take but make a punctured wound? Yeah. And so we also know that many of the insects, just a moment, I'm going to close this door. Yeah, so that we have said this before, that Lidum can also be used as a nebulizer to get bed bugs away. Yeah, and these beetles, they do the same thing with the potato and so forth. Yeah, it's always biting and boring and making holes in things. And that's basically what Lidum stands for. That's the keynote. Yeah, so I would say it will prove to be a very good remedy for those kind of things. And several people have me also asked about Lyme, if Lidum could be used against Lyme. And I said, well, you can use it when the tick is still on there, because the tick doesn't like it. Yeah. If you would spray the animal or your own neck when the tick is there, spray it with the stuff. Don't touch the tick. Yeah. Just spray the tick. Make him wet with the Lidum. And I bet you within 5 minutes he lets go.
Okay. Well, we'll have to tell more description about removing ticks, because I know it's should be done properly, so we don't leave any of it in. Now, people can go to Homeopathy World Community. There is a little beautiful advertisement on the front, on the right-hand column, that says Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, and you could click there and learn a whole lot more about your book and about the associated remedy kits that go with the book, so that you have all the things that you need to take care of your garden. We want to thank you so much, Kaviraj, for taking time from your busy, busy day and your busy practice to be with us. And I'm going to close the show and see you next Wednesday.
Okay. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye
you
bye.
For listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.